as a soldier or a first responder, you don't know when your major performances are going to come up. There's a mindset for before, there's a mindset for during, and there's a mindset for after. And the more you can get deliberate and aware of how to use that process, you can stay in the fight longer, and you can also perform better while you're on the job. Using emotions is the body's way to have some of the best performances that there are. Your breathing highly affects the way that you shoot a gun. What you really find when you go through pain and you go through some suffering is you find something on the other side that is really magical.
Welcome to this episode of Responder Resilience, along with my co-host, Dr. Stacey Raymond. I'm David Dashinger. On this episode, we'll be speaking with mindfulness and performance consultant Eric Leslie about creating resilience and using mindfulness for first responder and military personnel. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe on our YouTube channel, Responder Resilience. We're also on Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc. We're on all the podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, and we're on bbsradio.com. Our website is respondertv.com with guest information and all the past episodes. We'll be back to speak with Eric right after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacey Raymond, and Bonnie Lumley, LCSW EMTB.
We'd like to welcome our guest today, Eric Leslie from Modern Mindfulness, and we'll give you a little bit of background on Eric. He's got 15 plus years of experience working as a mindfulness and performance consultant for the military, doctors, and athletes. And Eric has a rare combination of skills and experience in training the world's toughest careers. He's a certified teacher from UMass Medical School in mindfulness-based stress reduction and received a master's degree from the University of Denver. As co-founder and lead teacher of Modern Mindfulness, Eric works with individuals and organizations to heal unhealthy stress, reduce anxiety and burnout, to unlock a happier, more productive life, both on and off the clock. He's designed mindfulness and performance courses for Special Forces and Apache pilots, as well as several hospital clinics. Currently, Eric teaches many top mindfulness teachers on how to build a mindfulness business, deepen their practice, and offer some of the best training for their clients. Welcome to Responder Resilience, Eric.
Yeah, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure.
Yeah. Awesome videos, you know, to begin this. I mean, the work you guys are doing is amazing. So I'm very excited to be a part of it and to share some of my experiences.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well,
I have a question right off the bat, because I noticed that your company is called Modern Mindfulness. And So I'd like to know, how does that differ from like traditional mindfulness?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let's dive right into that. So Modern Mindfulness is really stems from psychology in a lot of ways, in my opinion. You know, sports psychologist or a performance psychologist. And we'll get into a little bit of what that is in a second. But what we really found, and especially with my work in the military, is that in performance psychology, there are lots of different skills that you could develop: focus, imagery, you know, confidence, building your confidence, really building better thoughts for yourself. And all of those impact resilience and performance. But what we found is that you could teach all of those skills, and if you teach all of them and add them up, it wouldn't do as much good, or the client wouldn't get as much from it unless we taught something like mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's called in psychology. It's the third wave of cognitive behavioral therapy that is emerging. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I felt like if I didn't teach that, then it was unethical to teach it because the research was pointing to it in such a major way. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, way before the research, I was the client. Okay. I had a form of PTSD, and I didn't know how to deal with it. And I read a magazine called Time. You ever heard of it? And it said the best natural stress reliever is mindfulness. Uh-huh. And I said, gosh, I need that, because if I don't do that, right, I'm going to turn to other things like alcohol or drugs, and I just don't want to do that. So I turned to mindfulness, right, and it helped change my life.
So you touched on this a little bit, and I want to say I recently heard about Michael Phelps in his preparation for all his Olympic gold medals. Mm. He did an amazing amount of what I would call mindful preparation and visualization. So, Eric, in your work with military and first responders, do you view them as athletes that you're coaching, or how do you view them, and what kinds of tools do you give them to do their extreme jobs?
Yeah, first of all, I definitely viewed them similar to an athlete. Mm-hmm. They are not quite like an athlete in some ways. There's unique challenges that will come to military or first responder. One of those, among many, but one of them is the fact that you don't know as a soldier or a first responder, you don't know when your major performances are going to come up. You might have one come up in the first part of the day, and then in the middle of the day, and then at the end of the day.
It's not like an event that's scheduled on the Olympic, you know, program, right, type thing.
Right. You know you're going to be performing in this 3 or 4 hours as an athlete, so you can kind of get up for that. So that's unique to first responders or even military. So you need to train in that way. And what especially the military was really good at the physical training. But many times I would say, how much of your job is physical, and how much of your job is mental? And I never got anybody to say that their job was less than 50% mental. Mm-hmm. So if we're that good at training the physical, and that's what we're doing a lot of times, why aren't we training the other 50% of the job? Now, I had guys and gals also tell me and argue with until they were blue in the face that it was 90 to 99% mental. Wow. So if that's the case and you're not training that side or doing something to help that side, then there's a lot of your job that you're not being prepared for. So right. I really think that that is part of what mindfulness training allows us to do. And I just want to be a little more specific in the modern mindfulness training. Not only are we using research to help what's going on, but there is kind of the therapeutic point of view of mindfulness. And there also is a more spiritual, religious point of view. And I just want to say that modern mindfulness is more of a performance and resilience type of way of looking at it. And how can we look at the research and science that is around that? Resilience, in a lot of ways, is the practice of what mindfulness is. And we're seeing that a lot of resilience training being around breathing and around resetting the nervous system, which is really what we're doing for a lot of military and first responders and the work that I've been doing.
Great. I'd love to circle back to that more specifically in a minute, but I know Stacy has another question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think that, is it fair to say that the traditional mindfulness is more associated with the spiritual, like, you know, I think when I first started hearing about mindfulness myself, I thought of like a woman in like a tight yoga outfit sitting in lotus position under near a waterfall. and she's sitting there for an inordinate amount of time. And I'm like, that looks uncomfortable. Would you say that that's what the traditional mindfulness is associated with? And that's why some people resist it?
Yeah, I would say that. I also think that they think it is associated with some religion. And you can use a lot of that for spiritual purposes or religious purposes. But in the context today of modern mindfulness, we have stripped out some of that. And we have said, hey, this is more secular. This is, we're going to teach health around this. And I know that, you know, in the little town that I live in, the police chief was in talks with us, and they said, well, I just don't know if I can have my guys, you know, meditating. And I said, that's not really what is going to be happening. Mm-hmm. We're going to be going through some exercises. Some of them are similar to that, but it is not necessarily a religious meditation of some kind. We're not going to be just sitting in lotus posture and, you know, kind of Ace Ventura number two type of stuff here. We are going to do some other mental and resilience type work that is around how do we really change our way to respond to stress. And the only way to do that is to practice something, practice these mental skills. It's like going to the gym for your mind. And if you don't go to the gym, then you're not going to get the not only the resilience, but the endurance mentally and emotionally that it takes.
Yeah.
And just to circle back to Michael Phelps, he had this absolutely rock solid routine that he would start for his workouts and for a competition that, you know, he's probably spent more time on that than he actually did doing swimming workouts. And obviously it did amazing. It proved to be amazing for him and his record of gold medals. Eric, I think what's important that you're talking about is that kind of reframing meditation and mindfulness with some different terminology. And I'd love for you to talk about that a little bit. You know, when you're working with the military or first responders, what are some of the terms that you use that are a little different from the, let's say, woo-woo terms that you'd associate with meditation and mindfulness?
Yeah. So a lot of times it would be mental fitness is a good one. You know, just deliberate breathing, tactical breathing. How do you really make that? And a lot of times guys would say, well, I use some tactical breathing. That's good. But are we using it in a way that really can help the nervous system overcome what's happening and change our heart rate? So, you know, 30 years ago, something like that, we didn't really know that through breathing, you could start to change your heart rate and your heart rhythms. This affects the nervous system.
Right.
The parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system. The parasympathetic is the brake, and the sympathetic nervous system is the gas. And if we're always on the gas and we don't put on the brakes every now and then, or at least strategically, your system is going to get overwhelmed and you're not going to be able to handle stress in a way, or at least with the body, and you're going to start to experience burnout. So we need to be very deliberate in some of the ways that we use these breathing techniques. And emotions. Emotions affect the body on such an incredible level. And those are the things that we want to, you know, swipe under the carpet a little and say, well, you know, I just don't want to feel everything. Well, we're humans. We use emotions and we need to be able to use them effectively in order to increase resilience and performance.
there's this psychological phenomenon called compartmentalization that happens both for military, you know, when they're faced with a situation, and first responders. I think it's natural, and I think that, you know, they detach from their emotional response to what's going on, and then tuck it away, kind of compartmentalize it. Are you suggesting that they don't do that, or they practice not doing that, or that they later make it a practice to face what it is that they tucked away and do it in a calm fashion? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think sometimes it depends on the person and what in the situation, obviously. But in general, what we do know is two things. One, if you are always stuffing those emotions, you're going to have physical issues. We know that now.
Right,
the mind
right.
and the body aren't necessarily separate. So if I want somebody to have a long, healthy career, they're just not going to be able to do that because they're going to start to have different types of physical and mental problems over time.
Right.
You could do that for a couple of years and be effective.
Yeah.
The other thing is this. If I want them, if I or someone else wants them to perform at their peak, then emotions become relatively essential.
Right.
Using emotions is the body's way to have some of the best performances that there are.
Mm-hmm.
And so being aware of what they are, being aware of how to use them and how to up your tank when you're low on that stuff. Because, you know, I worked at the doctor's clinic for a long time, and they would ask, what do we do after, you know, quite frankly, someone doesn't make it in the operating room? We may even know it's someone's fault, and it was super emotional. And now I have to go to the room next to me and talk to a client and maybe even deliver bad news, maybe deliver even good news.
Right.
But I just walked out 1 minute ago of this, you know, somewhat tragic situation, and now I have to confront this person. How do I do that?
Sure.
And the only way is to take just a little bit of time transitioning and also try to pull your tank through because you're feeling exhausted emotionally. This happens to athletes too, right? You watch some of the games that they lose. They had an emotional or very close game the week before or the game before. And so it's really hard to get back up emotionally.
Yeah.
And so you can do that through specific breathing techniques and through some emotional techniques that can help you. Is it going to make you 100% all the time? No. But if I have 50% left in my tank, I sure as heck want to get the best out of that 50%.
Right.
You know?
And to your point, Eric, because first responders are often going to a traumatic, tragic incident, could be a fatal car wreck, say, and once they clear that scene, they may be moving on to the next call and the next call and the next call. So they basically have to be able to reset to be able to, you know, do their job effectively for 24, 12 hours, whatever their shift is.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some practical ways that a responder can make that transition from a very difficult call and then kind of reset, get back into being able to help other people?
Yeah, so there's a couple things that they could do. What I think the best thing that they can do is start to, you know, depending on how they're transitioning. So if they have to go immediately, I would for sure take a couple deep breaths and recognize what happened. Instead of just stuffing it down, just recognize, okay, this did happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is how it was responded, and sort of do their best to accept what has occurred, and then start to tell themselves how they'd like to respond to either the next situation or what's currently happening in their bodies and in mentally what's going on. So there's a process of kind of processing through what just happened,
mm-hmm.
and then deliberately transitioning to the next thing that they got to go to. And instead, what may happen is that we just stuff that down, we don't think about it, we don't process through it, and we don't even go on to the, we sort of go on to the next thing, but we're not super present on what's going on. And really how our body feels. I mean, it's okay to even experience some sadness. It's okay. And to feel some of that, you know, when I feel sadness or difficulty, you know, feeling that a little, because our tendency is to block it out, push right. it away.
Yeah.
So to some degree, leaning towards it and saying, that was difficult. And it's okay that it's difficult. But I'm going to breathe through it for a little bit. I'm going to process right. through it. And I'm going to then deliberately transition to the next thing. And so really then cueing your mind to think about what's next and how you would like to be in that situation and how you'd like to respond to that. And then I'd also say at the end of the day or at the end of the next day, but soon after, process through it again. Take some time out. See where you're at. Take 10 minutes. Take 20 minutes to reset the body, to reset the nervous system, to see where you're at. Because all that stuff will start to come up again. And to be able to deal with it and process through it is really going to be helpful, especially for the body and your nervous system to go through.
Right. I think people are afraid to do that, though. It's like they don't want to face it, especially when they have never practiced what you're talking about. How do you get first responders and military personnel to face what just happened?
Yeah. I mean, it takes courage, right? It takes, it takes some mental toughness to do that. It is a choice to say, hey, I got to face some of that. So part of it is just acknowledging that it's a choice and it's going to take a little time to start to face that. I think the other thing too is we're always wanting to be tough and we think toughness might be stuffing that and just not worrying about it.
Not being sad because sad might be equivalent to being weak.
Exactly.
If I let this get to me, I might be weak, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I've run into that with veterans and first responders.
But we know that's not really true, right? That's not exactly what the human spirit in some ways is really getting to. The human spirit is really connecting with people and connecting with ourselves on this deeper level. And what you really find, because I've done it myself, what you really find when you go through pain and you go through some suffering is you find something on the other side that is really magical.
Sure.
And you find something, a depth to yourself. And life isn't always rainbows and butterflies. And so to some degree, we'll make some rainbows and butterflies. That's awesome. But it is really about taking on some of that stress and some of that pain and saying, hey, I'm going to face it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to face some of that. Because a lot of times when you go through it, there's some beautiful things on the other side. I mean, you know why it's so difficult? A lot of times it's because we care so much.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really, really beautiful emotions on the other side of it.
Right.
And one other thing. The thing too is tough things happen and we have to face them. But a lot of times we don't have to suffer over them. It's the resistance to all of this bad stuff that creates difficulty.
Right, yeah.
So if there's pain there.
Sure.
But if we add to that pain by pushing it away.
Right.
Or by wanting more really great stuff in life.
Right.
Then that creates more problems.
There's that Buddhist belief, you know, that which you resist will persist. And I see that all the time. And so I try to teach that to my clients, you know, that you're fighting this. You're fighting this right now. And if you could just face it, just dip a toe in it. You don't have to dive into the deep end of the pool of that call or that emotion. Just dip a toe in it and see that you can handle it. Your nervous system is designed to handle sadness and anger and loss, whatever, grief, whatever it is that you're having trouble with, fear.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough one.
I
can't tell you how many times first responders and even veterans they'll well up because they're talking about something sad and they fight it. They're sitting there fighting it. And then if a tear drops, they feel defeated and they look at me and they won't look at me. They look at the ground and they say, I'm so sorry for crying. So sorry for getting emotional. And I'm like, please don't apologize. Like, this is the best thing for you right now.
How beautiful is it, though, that they're out there doing that, you know, they're taking care of us in society, mm-hmm. and sometimes right. seeing the worst of it.
Sure.
But then also being able to say, that's so beautiful that they get to go through kind of the side that says, hey, you have to go through your mental side because you're really helping society in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because you do the job that you do, right. you also need the support here in this way because
yeah.
you're seeing the worst of everything. And
sure.
thank God that there's somebody out there willing to do this. I mean, you know.
Yeah, and I think the thought process, at least what I had as a first responder, was, you know, we got to keep it together so we can help all these other people who are having this emergency.
Yeah.
We can't stop and hug each other or start, you know, crying or sobbing. We really have to be,
right.
we have to be able to be totally present in that moment to do the job. And then there's another job after that. And typically coming back to the firehouse, there's not like a kumbaya, you know, sitting around the table sharing our emotions, our feelings. It's like, you know, a lot of it's just laughter, black humor,
yeah.
Ball breaking. It doesn't really exist that often in the fire culture. But I think that the conversations like this that we're having starting to open doors to be able to see that there's other possibilities to do things a little different, and that it's not a sign of weakness to have an emotion. In fact,
right.
it's healthy.
Oh, absolutely.
There's books out there saying that when we repress emotions, we're setting ourselves up for major disease like cancer and other really
Absolutely.
Serious illnesses. So
it's got to come out somewhere.
Yeah.
And if it's pent up emotionally, it's going to manifest physically. Like I see that all the time.
This is something that I think is fascinating, and I'd love you to talk a bit about it a little bit. And that's, you know, in terms of mindfulness meditation, what does it mean to watch our minds? Like, you know, are we thinking machines who can never shut off our brains? You know, are we observers? Are we, how do we fit into the picture of our brain and how it operates?
Yeah. And I think this is really what the invitation into mindfulness is why don't we sit back and watch how this wonderful, you could say machine, I think it's much more than just a machine, obviously, but let's see how this magnificent part of our body works. A lot of times, we are not aware of the thoughts coming in and going out. And that's a problem. We have to become aware first of how the mind works
mm-hmm.
and what it does. And it's a very powerful thing to use. But at the end of the day, we're not our thoughts. And we're not our minds.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just want to be aware of the thoughts that are coming in. And you can get to a point where you kind of step back from those thoughts and kind of watch them come up and arise. And they'll stay for a while. And then they will fade away or they'll fade into another thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do thoughts even look? How do they come up in the mind, in the brain? What do they look like to you? And so I would encourage you
All right.
to go find out what that looks like. Now, I'll give you a little bit of the answer. Typically, they're images for people.
Uh-huh.
It's like a video or like a movie almost in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so once we even discover some of that, now we can work with it more. Now we can kind of see, hey, what are the characteristics of this mind? And how do I then learn to not necessarily control it? Because that mind can be crazy. It's hard to control. I've been trying to do that for 21 years, but a lot of times we can slow it. We can slow it down. And a lot of times through our breathing, that also affects the thoughts that are coming in. So when we slow our breathing, there is some research that indicates then our thoughts start to slow a little as well.
Right.
Now you can get to a point, if you do really practice this, where the minds, the thoughts start to get so, they're not coming up hardly at all anymore. Starting to really fade. They're there. You know, you can think if you want to. It's not like you don't have control of it. It's just that there's some calm. Mm-hmm. There's some silence. There's some peace. And it's really difficult to think yourself into peace. And so you have to have something else that brings you back down into that peace.
So what about individuals who have post-traumatic stress symptoms of intrusive thoughts and sounds and smells? Are you saying it'll lessen if they sit with that image of the dead child in the, you know, in the car accident, like that they can't stop seeing, they don't want to see it, like to allow themselves to see it and breathe through it? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it kind of depends on, you know, the severity of post-traumatic stress.
Right.
At the very severe, I think that research is pointing to a lot of grounding techniques to help them out first. Mm-hmm. And to start to, when their eyes get closed or when stuff like that happens, that maybe then we're using some certain techniques to help stay in the present moment right mm-hmm. there. Because what's happening here is your mind is taking you to the past consistently.
Yeah, right. Because it's saying, you need to heal this, or it's still happening. That's what, right. You know, images stored in the limbic brain, which has no sense of time. It's as if the person is still there, and that part of the mind thinks they're still there. And so here, deal with it. Here it is. Here's that dead child again. You need to look at this. So I would guess if it's severe, they need treatment.
Yeah, they need to work with somebody.
Yeah.
They may need to work with somebody. And grounding techniques are very similar to mindfulness, but I would not probably tell somebody to, with severe PTSD, to go into that immediately. Yeah. But myself, I've had, you know, medium, I would say, PTSD, and then it ended up being mild. And what happens is you sit and these things come up. After a while, they bubble up kind of out of, you know, what might be out of your awareness into your awareness. But they typically don't bubble up as intense as they were before. Sometimes they do, and you have to work with that a little. You breathe through it. Mm-hmm. You start to reframe it as it comes up, and you let it be there. Now, that's not easy, but if you can let it be there, even just a little bit for a while, and then come back to it later or whatever it might be, you're processing through it.
Right.
So you're not stuffing it. You're not ignoring it, which is the other two things that we do.
Sure.
You're letting it come up and it's healing. Just like you said, it's
and
healing.
And you're learning, I survived that 30 seconds of sitting and breathing through that. Nothing bad happened. You know, maybe I can breathe through it again when it bubbles up.
Yeah, and you're present. Because there is a part of presence that you understand that isn't happening now, but it also is coming up in the present moment. And so there's still a part of you that's like, okay, that isn't quite happening now, and I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it feels a little bit like it because I'm staying present. And the more you can stay present with that, those two start to it's kind of like at first it might be a 9. On 0 to 10.
Yeah.
But then the next time it comes up, it's like a 7 or an 8.
Right.
And you help it be there. And then the next time, and then all of a sudden it's like a 1 or a 2. And then that bleeds into your day. And it might still come up from time to time, but it comes up as a 2, not as an 8 or a 9, or even sometimes a 10.
Sure.
And because you've dealt with it, because you've processed through it. And so it's a crazy characteristic of the mind. You're programming it to be in the present moment more, and so it doesn't get as affected by the past or the imagination of the future. It's good to kind of plan for the future. It's not good to live in the future because we can't. It's difficult. We could try.
Right. At the end of the day, the present is the only moment that actually exists for us that we have any influence on. And so that's what you would call watching the mind. Is that sort of what that concept is about?
Yeah, be present and see how the mind works, right? It's And I think that is all mindfulness in some ways is about. It's a philosophy of how does our minds work?
Getting to know your mind. A lot of people that I work with hate their mind. They're like, I wish I could just shut it off.
Yeah.
You know, I just need to go to sleep, or I could just get drunk, and then I don't have to deal with whatever it's doing because it's just, I can't stand it. I've had people say that.
So. Yeah. Well, in part, that's part of what the research is showing. You know, they thought in the neuroscience part of this is they thought, oh, there'll be other areas of the brain that light up when you're meditating. And sometimes that's the case, but typically a lot of it is getting it shut down, especially the prefrontal cortex, which is where we do a lot of the thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this great, you know, picture. Fortunately, I didn't bring it with me, but it's where just within a couple seconds, I went into a meditative state and you could see my whole frontal lobe is shut down. And it's kind of a nice little circle around that frontal lobe. And so you can learn how to do more of that or shut down some of those brainwave functions, and that will help. It'll also open up other parts of the brain. But, yeah, it doesn't happen immediately. I think, you know, a lot of military personnel would tell me, well, I can't do this because we did this for 5 minutes. And I mean, my mind was crazy. I mean, so this just doesn't work for me.
And
it was like, well, wait a minute. Were you able to see some of that and then come back to your breath? Well, yeah, sure. I was. You were doing it. It was happening. Mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm. Just because it didn't, you know, just because you didn't
have 5 minutes of absence of thoughts, you know, like that doesn't happen to me.
Right. Right. You know? So you went to the gym. You lifted some weights, but you're not, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger yet, right? So calm down. Let's keep training here and see what happens to the tone, not just of our bodies if we were at the gym, but the tone of our minds, how we train it over time, and the strength and endurance that can happen from this type of training.
All right.
So like physical fitness, it's a practice that improves over time with consistency and putting some time in on a regular basis.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And you got to keep up with it too. You know, it's similar like with the soldiers and oftentimes even like the SWAT teams that we worked with and stuff like that. You know, the other thing is if you don't go to the range, what happens? You start to lose that skill.
And
mindfulness is somewhat similar to that. You will retain, research indicates we'll retain some of it over time, but we do need to keep practicing. And it's like going to the gym. If we don't go to the gym, you know, if we go to the gym once every 3 months, you know, that's helpful, but it's not that helpful. If we go 3 times a week, though, that starts to become pretty dang helpful.
Fairfield County Trauma Response Team is a nonprofit alliance of mental health professionals dedicated to helping first responders heal from trauma, tragedy, and stress. We help as they manage community crises and the everyday demands of ensuring public health and safety. Established in 2011, FCTRT was formed in response to a call for emotional help from the Stamford Fire Department after a traumatic fatal fire. Less than a year later, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting occurred, and members again served the first responder community. Most recently, COVID-19 created a need for our support. We provide free educational presentations, pro bono sessions to deal with community disasters, and an extensive referral service to trauma-informed psychotherapists. If you're a responder in Fairfield County and need help dealing with duty-related stress, please reach out to us so you can continue to do the job you love. Visit our website at fctrt.org or find us on Instagram at Fairfield County TRT.
So what results can first responders and military look forward to? Can you speak to that?
Yeah.
What results? So how long does it take?
Yeah, so crazy enough, we've done some research in this in the military. And what I found is that sometimes it could be as little as just 20 minutes. Now, I don't know because I didn't do enough studies there. Any good scientist will probably say that. However, it does look like we had some scales in literally looking at So mindfulness and performance and resilience, that those were going up in just as little as 20 minutes. Not one time, broken up over time. And so we were working with Apache helicopter pilots, and they don't have a lot of time. And so we didn't get them all that much. I got like 4 or 5 sessions with a group of them, and we did 5-minute mindfulness training with them.
Okay.
And then I added that up over time, and I compared it to 30 hours that I was giving another group, you know, in the military that we had. It was actually a mindfulness-based stress reduction group. And their scales went up anywhere from 18 to 22%, the 30-hour group. And the 20-minute group went up 4% compared to 18 to 22 in 20 minutes.
Wow.
And so that was crazy. Now that was just one program.
Yeah.
But we had another that we gave 60 minutes to, not 20, and they went up 7%. So they went up a little higher. So that gave us some indication that even some smaller practices of this can really help. Now, the other thing that we've seen, and we've seen this time and time again, is that performance goes up. Morale tends to go up.
Mm.
Now, we were also training some, you know, mindfulness is kind of the base of what we do. And then we have some leadership training. We have some other skills that we might add to it, you know, some coaching around how do they use their mind. For example, if you're aware of your mind and you want to regulate some of your performance, how can you do that with your thoughts and emotions as you go into, let's say, clear a room, or you go into a difficult situation. You know, when you're a police officer, when you're a first responder, you know that there might be a difficult situation. How do you kind of prime yourself to go into that space? And there's certain different mental skills you can use to kind of prime yourself before and after. Because if there's a performance coming up, there's a mindset for before, there's a mindset for during, and there's a mindset for after. And the more you can get deliberate and aware of how to use that process, you can stay in the fight longer, and you can also perform better while you're on the job.
Right.
So it's great. I like that it's offline and also online. You can be performing these things in advance, before or after, but also it sounds like you can be using some of these techniques on the job, so to speak, in the midst of responding or perhaps preparing for your response as a helicopter pilot or as a police officer, as an EMT paramedic, as a firefighter. What are some of the ways that responders can get started on the path if they're interested in having a practice of mindfulness?
Yeah. Or a practice just of really breathing, and a practice of really learning to set their nervous system. I think I would first find some guided meditations that could really help. You could call them meditations. I think just guiding practices that could help us to calm our minds. So the first thing you really want to do is have a focus point. Typically, that's the breath, because then the breath is the bridge between the mind and the body. And so really learning how to use your breath and breathe, it affects so much of our body. We don't even understand how much that is. But my mother here in the background just comes in.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom. Goodness sakes.
Just breathe your way through that.
Just breathe my way through that. so lovely to have her, though. So what we really want to do is learn how our breathing affects the body. And that does take a little bit of time. But I would really encourage them to start with, you could start with 2 minutes. And then maybe 5, and then maybe 10. And to be honest with you, let's not worry about getting to 20 or 30 right now. Let's just sit with that 10 for a while if you haven't done this before. Now, if you've done some of this, or you're really ready for more of this, sure. Mm-hmm. Go to 10 to 20, maybe even 30 minutes. Because 20 to 30 minutes is where really deep stuff can start to happen. Mm-hmm. And we're talking, you know, usually a day or every other day. But that's where you can really start to start to really influence the nervous system. Mm. But I would just say start with 5 minutes, because if you learn how your breathing affects things, and right. you know, for the military, this was, or even police, this is huge, because you're using it to shoot. Your uh-huh. breathing highly right. affects the way that you shoot a gun and right. how well you shoot that gun.
Right.
And
muscle
also
tension, muscle yeah. tension, blood pressure.
Blood pressure.
Your sleep will improve.
Your mental sleep clarity. Improves. Oh, it's huge, huge. That's actually the first thing that we always hear is my sleep has improved. They might not talk about the focus, or I don't know, my mind's still crazy, but my sleep improves. Right. Now here's the crazy thing. We used to tell the soldiers this too, is the one thing I can't train you to get better at or more of, you have to get enough sleep. At a certain point, yeah. mentally and physically, I can't train you to overcome sleep deprivation. Mm-hmm. I can only train you to get more sleep or to help your sleep a little bit more. So, you know, a lot of times they used to go out into the field and they get 3 hours of sleep. And then they say, well, why are we performing bad 2 weeks into this thing? Well, you've had an average of 3 hours of sleep for 2 weeks. So the only thing I can really help you with is how can you creatively try to at least get a little more sleep, because that's the one thing we can't fight against. But that breathing technique will help you put on the brakes and help your nervous system activate that parasympathetic, which is rest and digest, and that'll help you sleep more, and it'll help you sleep better. And that'll solve a lot of problems just in itself.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Very interesting stuff, Eric. And as we wrap up, is there anything that you wanted to touch on that we didn't talk about, or talk about how you offer your mindfulness training?
Yeah. Yeah. So first I would encourage you, and I know that some of this might be a little foreign to some people, a little different, but this is, I don't believe this is going away because of the effectiveness that we've seen from a lot of the individuals and mm-hmm. units that we've worked with. I mean, I worked with over 50 units. Some were special forces. Some went off to combat. And they came back begging for some of this because they saw how effective it was. And so the one thing I will say, too, is that you want to use these skills before major events happen. You want to use it during and you want to use it after. But if mm-hmm. you wait until that event or that difficult event happens, or stuff bubbles up in your personal life, and then you're dealing with not just one thing, but you're dealing with a lot of different things, you want to have the skills before all that happens. Right. Research really shows that that's going to help you litigate the stress, and the PTSD doesn't develop as easily or as much if you have these skills in advance. So I do want to say that, even for the people out there that, you know, might not have gone through super difficulties yet. But the other thing is, even if they have happened, it's never too late. And to have your mind and body and emotions functioning at an incredibly high level, it feels really good, and you can get help out there for that. So, and what I love about this work is there's nothing, if you go to a clinical psychologist, and maybe some of them should, that's awesome. They get the help that they need. That's great. But for me, you could come to me because you just want to perform better, or you could come to me because you want to be a little more resilient and help your stress levels. And so nobody really knows why somebody's working with someone like me. There's no stigma around that. Right. And I don't think there should be stigma around health or getting maintenance around your mental part of yourself anyways. I do myself. I don't always have major problems. I just want to be a better version of myself. So mm-hmm. so come to us. You're already really good. We're just going to make you great. So I love that about some of the performance stuff that we're doing in resilience. Mm-hmm. So you asked, how could they get a hold of us? Yes?
Yes. Social yeah. media, whatever, website.
Yeah. So we have a Facebook, of course, that they can get a hold of us. And we have a LinkedIn. We're very active in both of those at Modern Mindfulness, or you could go to Eric Leslie and look me up. But I would also say modernmindfulness.com, just spelling that out, mm-hmm. modernmindfulness.com, or they can also email me at eric@modernmindfulness.com. We'd love to help them develop a practice for themselves. We got a really vast network of teachers that we work with, because we also work with teachers. And so we have some of the world's best teachers starting to lead the way in this as well. Mm. And, you know, we do a lot of organizational training around this. So to make teams really great, to make leadership really great, and help them understand how they can keep their guys and gals in the game, in the fight, for longer, right, and keep them better in that way.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, it's been great having this conversation with you, Eric, and fascinating stuff. I think it's the leading edge of where things can be going in terms of improving performance for military first responders. And I salute you for what you guys are doing. Thank you so much for being with us today, sharing your information. And we'll put all your links up there on the page so people know how to get in touch with you.
Thank you for what you guys do. And thank you, everyone out there, for what you do every day. It's so important, and you know, it's so purposeful. So I appreciate that, and it's an honor to help serve you in the using my gifts as well.
Thanks for being here, Eric. And please check us out we're on a bunch of different places. We're YouTube, our channel is Responder Resilience. If you like what we're doing, subscribe, comment. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc. We are on bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the other podcast platforms. And go to our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes, guest information, and lots more. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.